You're listening to Face Off, episode 112, recorded March 14th, 2011. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am your other host, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about web technology, specifically web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com and contains all the links and a quick overview of what we talked about, which is always helpful, not only for SEO reasons, but for helping our viewer reasons.
It often helps me as well when I'm like, you know what? I know we talked about a web app that does what I want right now, but I can't remember the name. And I go and I do a little quick search and I find lots of great stuff. So we had a daylight savings time change. I think, was it Saturday or Sunday?
It was yesterday at midnight.
Or whatever. Okay. And it kind of feels like spring. We got a lot more light. I see in your studio behind you, you still have light over there in Bozeman. I still have a little bit of light here in Whitehall. And it feels a lot like spring. A lot more daylight in the day.
Yeah, I tell you what, I got a bad case of cabin fever. And the more I think about it, the more I just can't wait to go camping and backpacking and doing all that fun summer stuff that we get to do. I got my vacation saved up at work and everything. I'm ready to go.
So, yeah, I think last year we started in May, early May, or
yeah.
Do you remember? Was it later May?
I think it was early May.
In Montana, you know, we have to wait till the very end to start going to camping, because I think it got down to 30 degrees.
Only if you're a wuss. I was perfectly comfortable. I don't know about you guys. But.
Well, I mean, we can't go right now. You know, we'll freeze to death.
That's true.
Pick your days. Maybe we can. But I'm excited for that.
Totally.
So I know we talked about Square before, I think last episode, and talked about how it worked a lot better on the Droid Pro, but I got to see it with my own eyes. We swiped this weekend with your Square on my phone, and it worked great. Like first try, first swipe, didn't have to swipe it 100 times or anything like that.
Yeah, it didn't seem weird at all. It seemed like it knew what it was doing. You swiped it, and it didn't have to be perfect. Like we didn't, you know, it wasn't like a hold everything really firm and swipe it. You know, I just kind of, you know, took my card and swiped it as fast as I could, and worked great.
The other cool thing is it emails the both parties and it gives a GPS of where the transaction took place, which is pretty neat.
It took the location and, you know, it has a little signature field. So I signed it and I sent myself an email and it was cool to see my little signature there for the transaction that we had. Which, by the way, you know, a lot of times it makes it sound like Square, you know, it's for people who have a business or anything like that. But it was funny. We were kind of talking. Their web address is squareup.com. And it was totally funny because I wasn't thinking about it at all. You know, we went to Costco and Mark bought some stuff and we, you know, I was just going to pay him back. And I was like, all right, yeah, before you go, we better square up, thinking, you know, square up as in settle our debt. And I was like, oh, hey, that's where they got that. All right. Another big thing going on right now is South by Southwest. And I just kind of want to talk about that because I really have mixed feelings. South by Southwest Interactive is like the sort of web entrepreneurship conference. But, you know, the funny thing is I've heard it's such a diverse thing. Either people are there and it's the coolest thing in the world. But there's also a lot of people that think South by Southwest is just a giant waste, because what it does look like on the outside, at least as someone who doesn't go, is just partying constantly. It looks like everybody's just out at the bars, drinking, going crazy, you know, getting hungover, sleeping in, missing half of the conference anyways. And I was wondering, you know, kind of what you thought about that, because that's kind of the impression I get. And I always was kind of like, man, I really wish I could go to South by Southwest. But, you know, I look at it now, it's sort of so big and bloated. I don't know if it's really what I want anymore.
I don't know. I guess we'll have to talk to somebody that's been there. It does sound like there's a lot of partying going on. I don't know if, you know, maybe it's a big conference and then they relax at night and go partied up at night, or maybe it's a full party.
Well, I think
on.
It is. No, I mean, I think that's the whole point. You go to these South, all these things during the day. I don't know, but it's so funny. It's almost like you see more tweets about what happens at night than you do during the day.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we went to CES and I, you know, partied a little bit at night and got up and I was just miserable during the conference. So I definitely wouldn't want to experience
that.
Well,
you weren't even out partying, hobnobbing with fancy web celebrities or anything. You were just at a craps table at some casino next to the hotel. I don't know. The smaller conferences seem more appealing to me, to be honest. Like, I really want to go to Big Omaha, which is a smaller conference. I want to go to Les Conf, which is, you know, kind of a smaller conference. I don't know. The only conference, I guess, CES kind of. I almost don't count that because that was just kind of like a vacation, and it was really cool, but it wasn't so much web-focused, you know, whereas, like, you know, I look at, like, Les Conf. It's very entrepreneurship, very web-centric. I look at, you know, Big Omaha. But, like, the only real conference I'd say I've gone to is I went to Mountain West Ruby Conf, which is a very small conference. There wasn't even tracks. Like, a lot of these conferences, you sort of pick a track and, you know, you go see presentations and stuff. I mean, it was really small, and I liked that a lot. It felt very intimate. It felt very close. I could have gone up to any of the speakers. In fact, I saw all the speakers sort of hobnobbing around the crowd, sitting down in their seats when they weren't presenting. They were very interested in the content. You know, it felt, I don't know, it felt like a very rich experience, and I think the smaller conferences are sort of more my fit. I don't know. I guess we should go to one, you know, some more smaller conferences and some more really big ones and kind of see what we think.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the conferences too, I think, are like, a lot of the talks are published online, so you can get you know, a lot of the talks. I guess the main thing is, you know, mingling and meeting new people in the industry. I think that's probably the, you know, the biggest reason to go. And, you know, there's something, I mean, CES was different. I'm sure we've both seen you know, even the what's the gaming one, E3?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, we've seen media coverage of it and stuff, but it's just not the same when you start walking it off and you're like, man, I think we've walked 10 miles and we still haven't seen half the show, you know?
Yeah, or like, I mean, like, the highlight of CES was for me, like, seeing Leo Laporte, and it was just so silly to be like, ah, Leo, you know? And yeah. So I'm sure there's probably that too. Like, I'd love to go down South by Southwest and see Gary Vee, but also, like, Gary Vaynerchuk, he speaks at some of these other ones too. Like, you know, he was at Big Omaha last year. I think he's been at Les Conf before. So I don't know. I don't know. I really wish I need to definitely save up more money so that I have some money and free time to go to some conferences, because I think it's a cool experience. I mean, I'm not like a conference surfer. I'm not going to sit and go to them all year long, but, you know, one or two good ones I think is a really enriching experience.
Yep.
That brings us, hey, let's talk about who our first sponsor is. And our first sponsor this week is the application AgileTask. Which actually we have kind of an announcement to make. We did a release this weekend. It's me, you, and our friend Rob doing AgileTask. We actually did a release this weekend. So now you can schedule a task, and when you create it, you can schedule it through editing or creating. But what it does is, when that day hits, like if I schedule something for next Thursday at midnight on that Thursday, it'll get moved automatically from my Icebox to today. So like, if I know that I need to go, you know, April 14th, right, or April 15th, you know, file my taxes, I don't really need to worry about it before then, although you probably should. But, you know, if you don't have something you don't worry about until a particular date, you can schedule it, and then on that date, it'll get brought up into today for you automatically, and you won't have to worry about it.
Excellent.
We also added one new feature, too. It's kind of related to scheduling, but what it does is, what I found a lot of times is I'll try and get everything I've done, everything I moved to my today list, I try to get done, but things happen. You know, your boss comes in and says you have to work on this or whatever, and then sometimes you go home and it's like, you know, 9 o'clock at night and you're just not going to get everything done. You still have four things in your today box. But let's say you want to do that tomorrow really quick. You know, it's a lot of things that happen. You just push it off to tomorrow. I'll just work on it tomorrow. If you have a task in your today box, there is a plus one next to it, and that is the bump. And what that will do is bump it to your icebox until tomorrow. And then tomorrow will get automatically moved up into your icebox for you so that you don't have to worry about it. You can go to bed, clear out your today box, and go to bed feeling like you have got everything done that you had planned for the day.
Nice.
Yeah, so check it out. That's at agiletask.me, and that's our favorite web app because, well, we wrote it. That's why. All right, let's get into our geek tool of the week. I saw this and I thought it was amazing. It is the MountTek MT5000 CD slot mount. It's a universal mount for hands-free cell phones, for your satellite radio or your GPS device. What makes this one particularly cool is that it mounts itself by sliding into your car's CD slot. I don't know about you, but I think with sort of the expanse of cell phones and MP3 players, I really don't use my CD player that much, but if you're lucky, you still got one in your dash, you can get this mount for only $20. really cool, and just slide it into your little CD slot, and then you have a nice mount with GPS right in the middle. You know, a lot of people mount them right in the middle on their dash anyways, and this way you don't have to put like a sticky pad or anything on your dash.
That is so simple yet clever that it just blows my mind that they're like, you know, what's the standard on every car pretty much? A CD player, right?
Yeah.
And the slot is going to be the same width as on every vehicle, basically, because it's a CD slot. yet it's strong enough to hold a cell phone. And then the universal clamps on all sides, so it fits every phone. I don't know about you, but something that's really frustrating, you buy a new phone and you got to buy like $50 worth of accessories, and then you get rid of that phone and you got to buy more accessories. This thing's only $20 and it works with everything.
Yeah, we saw it with the Droid. You know, I mean, we bought the Droid, I bought the fancy car mount for it, and I loved it. It was great. And then all of a sudden I got into a Droid Pro and there's no car mount for it. And I had, you know, give my dock to my wife who has my Droid now, you know, kind of ceremoniously like, oh, take my dock. I miss it. Yeah, you know, another cool thing too, I guess I just read, is it, if you don't have a CD player, that's okay too. They kind of designed it to fit into any sort of slit or thin, you know, slot in your car. So like that crack, you know, like where your dash meets, you could sort of wedge it in there and it'll mount in there as well. So pretty cool.
Very good reviews too. Everyone's giving it 5 stars. So totally. If you need a dock, check this out.
Yeah, check it out. The MountTech MT5000 CD slot mount. Let's move into our web apps. The first web app we want to talk about. It's funny. This is one I've used actually for a long time, and I just never talked about it on the show. It's called Egg Timer. You can get to it by going to e.ggtimer.com. So it spells Egg Timer, but it's e.ggtimer.com. And what this is a really dead simple web app that gives you a timer. So you know, if you go to the website, they have all kinds of usage examples. You can do it in the URL like eggtimer.com/15 minutes. We'll give you a 15 minute countdown. And all it does is put this big black, you know, number countdown on the top of the screen that will count down for you and just slowly do it. I used it for, we used to have meetings that ended up always taking longer than an hour. So what I would do is we'd go to the meeting, I would turn on the projector, I would bring my computer to this website for 1 hour and just project the time left up on the screen. And people knew that once that was done, we're out. You know, once this thing counts down, we're out of this meeting. So really, people were really more conscious about if they're getting off topic, things that they should break out and talk about in another meeting and not waste everyone else's time in the meeting. So I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know, you could go to the web, you know, the web app and type in how many minutes you want to count or, you know, hours. But they also have kind of a restful type interface where you could say like eggtimer.com/15 minutes or, you know, 2 years, 10 months if you're doing some kind of a countdown to 2012 or something. Or you could do like 1 hour, 30 minutes. They also have special timers, which you can say Pomodoro, for example, which does 25 minutes and then 5 minutes, then 25 minutes, then 5 minutes, mm-hmm. which is if you ever look into that, it's a productivity hack where you can do 25 minutes of work or whatever and then 5 minute break.
Yeah.
And you continue that cycle.
It's like the Pomodoro technique or something like that. I've been looking at it.
So you can also, I mean, you could make your own shortcuts if you want to, you know, do 20 minutes and then 5 minutes, you can make little shortcuts on your desktop and, you know, go mm-hmm. just to these things. Or if you have a meeting that, you know, is 15 minutes long, you could have a shortcut on your desktop that says start the meeting.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Or eggtimer.com/brush teeth for a full 2 minute toothbrushing, which, by the way, my Sonicare toothbrush does for me. What's funny about the Sonicare toothbrush, that's the feature I love the most, is that it has a 2 minute timer. You push the button to start it, and it's not done until that 2 minutes is up. So I get my full 2 minute teeth brushing. So I don't need eggtimer/brush teeth, but I'm sure a lot of people do. I did before I got that. Check it out, e.ggtimer.com. Our next web app that we want to talk about is called JS Fiddle. And JS Fiddle is pretty cool. It came to us from Qasim Alias. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but he kindly told us how to pronounce his first name. It's Qasim. And what JS Fiddle is it's an online IDE to play around with JavaScript.
Yeah, so you can select different frameworks. They've got MooTools, different versions. So if you wanted to try out different scripts, maybe you're having a problem with one version, you want to just flip to another version, see if the problem's still there, you could do that. Maybe you want to, you know, you're not convinced yet on a framework, you can kind of check out the differences between jQuery and MooTools or Prototype or, you know, any of these other ones. the nice thing about it is you just type up a little HTML, some the CSS and the JavaScript, and then you pick the different framework you want to try, and it will show the result in the other window.
Yeah, it's got some cool. It's got a lot of cool things. This really is an IDE for playing around with JavaScript online. I'm very impressed with what it is. You can do things like you can run things, you can save them, and what it does is another thing. It also has is you can tidy up. It has a tidy up function, which will clean up and minimize or minify and clean up your stuff. Also, there's a quick link to JSLint, which is a JavaScript validator, to make sure you're doing the right stuff. Similar to what is it, JSON Lint? No, JSLint is the one by David Crockford, right?
Yeah, validates and cleans up JSON.
Yeah.
You can also add your own resources. If you have a URL for your own CSS, you can drop that in there as well, JavaScript or CSS. So if you want to test out your scripts with their framework and play around, you can do that as well. They have examples, so you can just click on it and say, I want to see jQuery delay, you know, or jQuery tweets. Just loads up a simple tweet thing, and you can go ahead and change the code and play around with it.
You can add a link to other JS files that you want to include. Like, they have an add resources section on the side. Yeah, and so basically there's three boxes. I usually kind of talk about what it is. There's three boxes. There's an HTML box, a CSS box, and the big one is the JavaScript box. And then there's another box, which is the result, where it actually sort of renders and runs your JS and what you're trying to do. So in your HTML, you put your divs and whatnot, you know, no big deal. In your CSS, you can style it however you want. And then your JavaScript box, you actually write your JavaScript. And then, you know, when you want, you can save things and you can, you know, then you just run it and it'll actually fill it up. It'll render it in the result screen and then run your JavaScript so you can test things out. Really cool little web app for developing in JavaScript.
They even have an API. If you want to test AJAX calls, you can basically the jsfiddle.net/echo/json, for example, and it'll spit out some test JSON for you to display.
Very cool.
So check it out.
Thank you, Kossum. That is a great web app. We're totally pumped to see that. Hey, if you guys out there have some news, a follow-up, a web app, or a geek tool, or a topic we should talk about, let us know by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We actually got some cool feedback this week about some possible topics, so we're going to start hunting those down and fleshing them out and getting them ready. I'm pretty pumped about that. And with that in mind, let's talk about our second sponsor of this episode, which is, of course, our classic little app, Rocketship, that Mark Samuel works on. Rocketship will give you rates in USPS, UPS, and FedEx. It's very simple. If you're a programmer and you're looking for, you know, you have any sort of shipping app doing PHP, you have a lot of really, really happy customers, Mark, right?
Yeah, it's very well tested. There's thousands of packages a day that's using it. There's quite a few customers. So if you're looking for a bulletproof, easy to use solution for labels, rates, or tracking, or even address validation, just basically everything UPS provides, it's available for you.
Yeah, check it out by going to rocketship.it. All right, our topic this week is our final what would you call it, installment of our Programming Rules of Thumb series. We've had some really good ones in the past week. I've been really excited about it, but there are some definitely really good ones this week that I want to talk about. Mark, let's get into the first one.
All right, so the first one is called Metcalfe's Law. The value of a network is the square of the number of participants. Basically, what that means is the network is everything. You see this in sites like Twitter, Facebook, eBay. You know, if Facebook didn't have a lot of people on it, it would be a worthless site for the most part.
Absolutely. I remember when Twitter was gaining steam, I used Jaiku because I thought Jaiku's feature set was better. I liked the way it was laid out. I liked the way it did things better. But really, in the end, I had to abandon it because there was just more people on Twitter. And that's really what it is. It doesn't matter, you know, having the features, but conversing with only yourself and one other person is no fun. In the end, I sacrificed more features to go to the place with more people, and now I really like Twitter.
Yeah. You know, and it's one of those things, and I don't know how you feel about this, but, you know, some of the advice given around now for startups is, you know, don't make any money at all and see how big of a network you can get. And I don't know if that's good advice or not. I mean, it kind of worked out for Facebook and Twitter, you know, monetize later, worry about that later after you've captured everybody on the internet, you know?
Well, but again, that's, you know, the value of a network is the number of participants. So really, I mean, you are fighting with something that is really valued by its massive number of participants. You really have to have some reason for people to decide. And a lot of times one of the big reasons is the network. So you'd have to get, you know, very key people or something so that they recognize sort of the value of moving to this new network rather than this other network, which has a ton of people.
Yep. The problem, I guess, is if you have a startup and you only capture a small percentage of the internet users and you're offering nothing but a free service, you might find yourself you know, running out of resources to provide for those users.
You know it.
It can also be a competitive advantage if you, you know, get a huge number of users. A great example of that is eBay. You know, it'd be difficult for another auction site to come up just because they don't have the amount of users that eBay has. Just that alone, simply because of the amount of users in auctions.
I wonder if at some point though it sort of peaks and then goes down, because like what we're seeing with like almost like, you know, Twitter and Facebook these days is that there's so many people on it that it's starting to become not cool. There's there's sort of a movement in the younger generation where the sort of cool people aren't on Facebook because, you know, like to them, that's where everyone else is and that's stupid. And so I always wonder if that's kind of like after a while it'll peak down or if that's just sort of the effects of time.
The next one is Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. This just, you know, the number one example is like when you're trying to do a presentation and you've got this example that's laid out, if there's something that, you know, can go wrong, it usually does right when you're trying to do your presentation.
Exactly. That's why a lot of people say, you know, don't demo something if you don't have to, because if it can go wrong, it will.
In programming, we often, you know, make programs that are very fragile. Like it works if you give them the right little, you massage them just right and you give them the right data and the input, but you give it to a user and the first thing they want to, you say, test this out. And the first thing they do is they start, you know, just typing away and they you know, they don't know anything about the app and they can break it in seconds.
Absolutely.
So it's one of those funny things is, you know, if there is something in your app that can go wrong, it will go wrong at some point.
Well, I have a couple of users like that. Actually, both of them, my current boss and my previous boss, my old boss, Carol, we used to have what we called the Carol rule, whereas if we thought something was bulletproof, hand it to her because she was just great at figuring out the little things that we never thought of at all. And so she was always the type that would break it and find every edge case possible. It was awesome.
The next one is Brooks' Law, which says adding manpower to a late software project makes it later. And that's by the Mythical Man Month book, which is pretty popular. I think the reason because this is because you still have requirements that have to be met, yet you bring on new people and they have to get up to speed with the project and you have to communicate with all those people still what the requirements are. And if you don't have, you know, if your project is late to begin with, adding more people is just going to cause more complexity of the communication.
Right. There is an overhead to communication. So the number of nodes sort of adds more overhead. So also, you know, depending upon like what kind of team you are, people have to get integrated before they get fully comfortable in the team. They have to get comfortable with the code base, understanding not only the product, but how the inner workings of the product itself work. I mean, think about it. It's hard to understand just the whole scope and history of a project, let alone then understand the scope and history enough to start programming for it. And I think just the thing is, it seems like such a simple thing, like, it's not, you know, like it's a factory, put more people in. But it really doesn't work a lot of the times. And it has to be a decision you really have to carefully think of. Like if you, let's say you have a team that is very, you know, close with a lot of code ownership sharing. And all of a sudden, you know, you need to bring in the same, you know, two people from the same team that were working on something else, you know, that's different. But just throwing people at it doesn't, you know, oftentimes adds to the overhead of communication and organization, as well as, you know, you have to bring them up to speed. And by the time they get to a full productive state, you're already late anyways, usually.
The next one is Parkinson's Law, which says work expands so as to fill the time available for completion. So if you give a completion date of a project, you will find something to do in order to fill that space to get it complete. You'll work and do it till that. On a side note, there's also in software and development, there's, you know, other sayings that are very similar to this is like data expands to fill the available storage. Mm-hmm. If you have like a storage requirement, you know, you only have a X amount of space, you'll eventually meet that space.
Mm-hmm.
Just something that, and I guess I see it, you know, and if I have space to fill, I'm less stringent on what I delete and save.
Yeah, I think this sort of touches on a lot of things involving software development. I think one of them is sort of like how we've noticed that programming has gotten sort of inefficient the more powerful CPUs and stuff get, you know, where it's almost true. Like when you look at it, like with video games and stuff, your sort of total game value doesn't really increase or decrease. It's just that all of a sudden it's like they have this new awesome video card. So then it's like, oh, we have a new awesome game that we'll use it all up, you know. And and really, you know, yeah. I remember playing, you know, Quake 2 and being like, this is so realistic, you know. And then Unreal came out. I was like, this is so realistic. And then Crysis came out. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is so realistic. And it just kind of keeps going on and on. I think another thing, too, about this is that I think it's important to realize, too, that this is part of a lot of agile thought. So like with a lot of agile software design, the whole point is you set up an iteration. And the benefit is that if you get, you know, with specific goals, and if you get those goals done inside the iteration, then you have time to refactor and clean up. So, you know, that refactoring and cleanup and refining sort of fills that space if you have some extra time at the end.
Very good point. The next one is not a law, but it stands for something, and it's kind of more object-oriented design, which is SOLID. And it stands for the five basic patterns of object-oriented design. So the first S, which is single responsibility principle. In general, an object should have only one responsibility. You know, the name of the object should be pretty self-explanatory, and it should only do that one thing
and do it well,
and not like do a bunch of other stuff.
Totally.
The O stands for open closed principle. It should be the software or the object should be open for extension but closed for modification. The L is Lixov substitution principle. I'm not sure exactly what that comes from, but objects in a program should be replaceable with instances of their subtypes without altering the correctness of that program. The I, interface segregation principle. Many client-specific interfaces are better than one general-purpose interface. And this, you see this a lot in like Unix philosophy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, make a small tool that's all it does is one little thing, and it does that one thing very, very well. I can give you a really good example that I ran across just the other day. Was in Linux. I wanted to upgrade my computer at a specific time, yet the program that, you know, apt required me to say yes. Mm-hmm. It required me to say yes, please install this thing. Well, in Unix they have a program called yes, which all it does is output y's constantly, or you can configure it to say anything, but it's all it does is it answers yes, so you can tie it together with another program.
Right, and it has interfaces to communicate with each other. So like you can pipe yes to this. So you can, I mean, I like that you can sort of have all this communication between these very specific things. Like I can pipe, you know, you do what you pipe into yes or whatever what you're doing, or you know, you can take something and pipe it into grep. You know, they have these sort of interfaces for communicating, but these small objects that do things, you know, that interface in a very particular way, but they only do one thing. So you're not making like just one big program. I mean, we always talk about, I joke, it's kind of like the Windows registry, you know, start having a bunch of small flat files for configuration. You have like this big monolithic binary thing that tends to goof up a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of. That's a stretch, but I'll take it.
The other thing is if you make these small little, you know, sub kind of programs that do one thing well, somebody else might glue those pieces together in a way that you've never even thought of in your generic general app.
Totally.
The D for to finish this off with the word solid is dependency inversion principle, which is basically one should depend upon abstractions, do not depend upon concretions. So if you were to, let's say, have an employee class and you needed to persist the data and you were not sure how you wanted to do that, maybe you wanted to do to XML or to JSON or just go to the database, instead of making like a function to XML or to DB, this would be violating the single responsibility principle. You'd want to make an abstracted class called like data writer, and that would inherit the employee information. And that way, if you wanted to, you know, maybe later add HTTPS, you know, you wanted to output to HTML or something, you could do that without rewriting previous code.
Interesting. That's an interesting concept. Hard to wrap your kind of, well, I mean, kind of, it seems counter sort of against everything I've seen already, but that's not, you know, I'm not saying like the Rails guys are like huge OOP freaks or anything, but.
And then before we wrap up Solid, I found a funny little post here, and just to sum it up, so single responsibility principle, just because you can doesn't mean you should. That would be the S. The O, open close principle. Open chest surgery is not needed when putting on a coat. Linksov substitution principle, which is the L. If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, but needs battery, you probably have a wrong abstraction. And then interface segregation, you want me to plug this in where? And then dependency inversion principle, would you solder a lamp directly to an electrical wiring in a wall, which is that last one we just talked about.
Yeah, I would.
Instead of just outputting, you know, and do this crazy XML stuff, you should just write a abstraction that writes the data anywhere, and then you can write the backend stuff later.
It's true. It's true. Let's get into our next one. The next one is a good one. I think that a lot of people need to, like me, myself included, need to know when to stop.
So the next one is good enough for now. And this is, this is whenever you're making a feature, it's a lot of times we talked about the other one too. If you ain't going to need it, yeah, is another acronym. It's oftentimes it's like make kind of the simplest version of what you had in your head. And you know, this is good enough for now. Let's just get it out and, you know, see how people react to it. And we'll go from there. It's often a better approach. You know, maybe your users don't even want the feature you're working on.
yep.
So that's good enough for now. The next one is worse is better.
Yeah, I like this worse is better because it's a lot. It's similar to that to the good enough for now we just talked about. And it's for me, it totally embodies sort of what we've been trying to do with Agile Task. And the worse is better means that oftentimes, like what sort of looks worse on paper, like the app with the less features, is actually better because it's more focused. And you know, like we talk about that, what was it, the 80% rule, like, you know, 80% of the people only use 20% of the features of like Excel, you know? And that's kind of like what this is talking about, saying, you know, oftentimes it's like, well, look, they've got this feature and this feature and this feature and this feature. And it's like, well, but is that better? You know, look at how you implemented it. Did you, you know, is it built better? You know, is it faster? Is it easier to use? Usability is a big one here, right? Like instead of adding a ton of features that you have terrible usability, just do two features, but make it a really nice experience to use.
Yeah, I think Apple does a good job at this. Like the iPod, you know, if somebody described to you, oh yeah, I got this new iPod, it only has one button on the whole thing. You'd at first, you know, be like, that's worse. That's not good.
You're like, but where are my 30 keyboard keys? And oh my God, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, worse is sometimes better. And then the next one that kind of ties those two things together is minimum viable product. And that is the main concept behind that is that you make the minimum, you know, if you think about what it is to get your project or your feature out there, what is the least amount we can get out there to trial it out, to give it to our users and let them play with it, and not, you know, perfecting it, not making it totally a perfect feature, but just something that works. You know, it's not super buggy, but something that works, that has the minimum viable features, or you know, an entire product that's, you know, minimum and viable.
Exactly. Get it out there and start iterating, get some feedback and get going.
The advantages of this is, you know, you'll be able to get it to the user's hands right away. They'll get their hands on it, you know, start playing with it and say, oh, this, I'd like it this other way. Or maybe your users say, this is not good at all, and you have to start over and start at the drawing board again.
Yeah. So always think of your minimum viable product. There's a lot of, I've seen a lot of new web apps out there that talk about that a lot. It's an abbreviation that I've seen in the blog sphere a lot lately. A lot of people, when they're doing startups, they really are almost doing just a small startup of a minimum viable product, getting that out there, and then, you know, testing the water instead of going, you know, putting their chips all in with staff and time and money, you know, like just put out this, you know, very small, awesome product, you know, the worst is better, only what you need to do, and seeing what happens. So that is the conclusion of our Programming Rules of Thumb episode. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to remind you that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. And also you can leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. We had a lot of feedback in this episode. And we got some cool topics coming up that were suggested by our listeners. So stay tuned. I'm pretty excited about that, as well as hopefully some new... I'm spilling the beans here, Mark. We're going to try and have some interviews coming up in the next couple episodes. So stay tuned. We got exciting stuff coming. Thank you for listening to the show so much. We appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week.